It's time for us to cross to Canada to speak with John Rafferty, the Chief Executive of the CNIB, Canada's largest sight loss charity. And each month, we chat about some of the big stories affecting blind and partially sighted people. John, thank you very much for joining us once again.
That's always a pleasure. Thank you for having me, Alan.
Okay, we've got a few topics to chat about today, John. We're going to start with something very familiar. This is dogs. Am I thinking here guide dogs?
You are thinking guide dogs, yes. Although we could talk about dogs in general if you want, but I think probably let's stick with guide dogs. So I think we've chatted about this before. We've been in the guide dog business now just for a year, and our first puppies are coming out of puppy training and going into guide dog training, and we still have a steady flow of pups going into these amazing families with our puppy raisers. So the process is moving along. I thought it would be good to give people an update that we're up to 30 puppies now. And so we'll be placing our first dogs in pairs, working with individuals in the kind of September, October timeframe, and start to close the gap. At the moment, about 75% to 80% of all guide dogs in Canada come from schools in the US. There are a number of home-based organizations in Canada, but they're relatively small. But you know, there's a lot of people who don't want to go to the US, and the supply and the level of supply in Canada of guide dogs domestically is quite low relative to the population. And as a result, there's a lot less guide dog users in Canada than there would be, you know, proportionally to the UK or Japan or Australia, as an example.
Now, you're hoping to get the puppies out with their owners in training then in September. So, you know, a lot of work has gone into this. You know, you have to set up a lot rather than just, you know, let's find some dogs and get the training. So this has been in the works for some time.
It's been in the works for a couple of years now. It takes about 2.5 years from a decision to start the process until you're able to match qualified dogs with individuals. And once that process begins, though, each month to 2 months, we've got new puppies coming into puppy training. So we're looking to grow the number of dogs in Canada significantly over the coming years.
Great. And I'm assuming then the demand is there. People know that you're doing this.
Well, actually, interestingly, we've not talked about it too much with people like yourself, Alan, or others, because we're concerned that the demand will be so high that we won't have the supply. So we're trying to be quite careful about it, because the timeline between a puppy and a qualified guide dog, as I just said, is over 2 years in most cases. And so we're hoping that we have a fairly slow demand to start with, that we control quite well, and that as we're able to increase our supply, we'll make more and more people aware of it. But we believe that there are upwards of 700 to 800 Canadians who would want a dog that currently don't have one.
I'm a guide dog owner myself, John, so I'm well aware of the independence, the confidence and so on that having a dog can bring someone with a visual impairment. But, you know, with that independence goes the understanding from society that the dogs are there, they're working dogs, and, you know, there's certain places they're allowed to go, they're allowed to travel. Is that the same then for you guys as it is here in the UK?
Shockingly, we still have some of the same challenges. The guide dogs have significant rights, but those rights are always being impinged upon by taxi drivers and restaurant owners and alike. We actually just brought on board, as we've been growing the business, someone who is a guide dog user, a Paralympic medalist, who's just joined our team to head up kind of that stakeholder engagement and advocacy effort, and is full-time working with communities and community partners to make sure that guide dog access is clean and smooth for our guide dog owners.
And as part of that legislation as well, working with governments and local governments and so on to make sure these laws are there, they're strengthened and so on, as well as you say, the engagement with service providers.
Yeah, and we've got a good framework of laws, but a guide dog user doesn't want to have to rely on a law to allow access. They want society to be aware of the rights and welcoming of guide dogs in transportation areas, in retail, and restaurant arenas. And we do have a good stick, as they say, in the legal structure in Canada, but it's far better for society's knowledge and awareness to grow. And surprisingly, it's not as good as it could be.
Well, we certainly hope to follow this one, John, for the first class of graduates, hopefully coming towards the end of the year. But let's move on then from guide dogs to technology and virtual reality.
Yeah, so we've talked a couple of times about our new location that we've been modelling in Toronto, this community hub. And we've now got kind of fully functional a virtual environment that we're using. We've got one environment we're working with that's relative to mobility and managing busy intersections, and starting to work on other environments now around kind of school environments like playgrounds and assemblies, travel environments like subway trains and aeroplanes. And what this does is it provides a complete 360, both visual and audible environment that we're able to control to create a virtual experience for people, to break down the barriers and the apprehension about someone's ability to achieve something after losing their sight. So for kids that are going to be going to school for the first time that are blind or low vision, the idea of a playground is a scary place. So if we can have people experience those environments in a virtual way with family members, with caregivers, then that's going to enable them to transition into that real life experience a little bit more easily. The same thing with, you know, many people when they lose their sight think that their ability to travel is something that's going to get limited. And I know that doesn't apply to you who travels around the world all the time, but it's a scary prospect to get on a plane or a train if you've never done it before without sight. So by creating that virtual environment, again, we can break down those barriers and increase people's confidence and thinking around what they're able to do.
We're going to end actually on technology and getting tech into people's hands, because, you know, I think we talk about this quite often, John. In the 21st century, technology, both bespoke, if you like, and off the shelf, can make a huge difference to the lives of people with visual impairments.
And there's no reason in today's world where we have a stance or a belief that these smartphone devices and iPad devices are more than a telephone. They're a safety device. They're an entertainment device. They're a connectivity device. They're many, many things. And you know, the barrier to getting them, we still have in Canadian society at large, there's 90-something% of the people have smartphones. But within our community, it's in the 45-46% is what our research shows. So we've got a big gap, and we're about to launch a number of programs to actually ensure we can get technology into people's hands. We're going to start by lending people for kind of 6 months, 9 months at a time, technology that has all the apps on it, that comes with training that goes with it, so people can start experiencing it, start understanding the value. It's one of those things, you don't know what you don't know. And when you lose your sight, you don't know that things like seeing AI exist. And what they're going to mean to you. So we're going to get technology in people's hands in a big way. We want to close that gap and get tens of thousands of more Canadians in the coming year technology who've never had it before.
Again, John, you know, something which we will certainly go into more detail as the year progresses, you know, to get technology in people's hands and show them the difference it can make and have somewhere they can go for advice is invaluable. I'm sure it will grow as well. In the meantime, John, we're almost out of time. So if people would like to learn more about CNIB, what's the best way to do that?
Best way to do that is to follow us on Twitter at CNIB, join our family on Facebook, or do it the old-fashioned way and go to our website, which is cnib.ca.
John Rafferty, thank you for joining us once again on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you for having me, Alan.